don't consider myself a hero. I'm an ordinary girl who believed in a dream. You don't have to be someone special or anything special to achieve something amazing. You just got to have a dream, believe in it, and work hard.
That's Jessica Watson extolling the virtue of believing in a dream. She's speaking in 2010. I don't know, were you following her when she was just 16 as she went across the ocean? Because I certainly was. Her video logs, her blogs, were amazing. She just kept talking to us from the middle of the ocean. 23,000 nautical miles of ocean she covered. That's over 42,500 kilometres all on her own. Now, Talk Underwater is a new novel about two teenagers who are fascinated by Jessica's incredible feat of navigation. But these two girls also face challenges of their own navigating the barriers of language. Tasmanian writer Catherine Lohmer is speaking to Anita Barrow.
Your main characters are a boy called Will Lane and the girl's called Summer Rainbird, and you can kind of gather where she comes from. And they have this shared interest in Jessica Watson, and they meet online.
Yes, and I was interested in the online meeting. That's how a lot of young people meet initially, actually. And I'm also interested in there is some subterfuge that happens. You know, that's happened among young people I know, and how that could work in the story, what might be said and left unsaid.
And we should say about the setting, Will's been living on a boat in Eden, that's in New South Wales coast, but not liking it there because he's come from Kettering, which is about 30k south of Hobart, which is where Summer lives, and they have that connection because Will has grown up there.
Yes, well, Kettering is a little coastal hamlet, but it has these days a very large marina, and it's right opposite the beautiful Bruny Island, and it's where the car ferry leaves to go to Bruny Island. So Bruny Island is a fantastic area, you know, for sailing. The D'Entrecasteaux Channel there is full of beautiful sheltered bays, and so it's a real hub for yachties and all of that. And so Will has grown up there in Kettering and learned to sail from a young age, and is a very confident sailor.
And Summer, not such a confident sailor, but really interested in it.
Yes,
fisher person, isn't she?
She does have a dream to sail one day, although she doesn't really know how that will come about.
So these two people meet online and then they continue their conversation. But Summer has neglected to mention to Will a key part of herself. What's her rationale for that?
The fact that when she does meet people, the first thing that becomes obvious is that she's deaf. She says something like, you know, from then on, you know, I'm the deaf girl. And she says to Will that she just wanted to be able to have someone meet her as an equal and on her own terms through their conversations, to get to know her without having that first confronting fact about her known.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that Will is actually less shocked about her deafness but about her lying to him.
Yeah, he's confused, he's angry, she's omitted this huge important thing about herself. It's not the only thing she's done, mind you, so he's very taken aback.
They're very refreshing, these two teenagers. They don't have this kind of big sense of entitlement that's often portrayed. They're also very curious.
Yeah. When I first started the book, it was really a book about Will wanting to get back to home. And then Summer was a character he met, but soon I realised that I wanted them to both have equal standing in the story, and I wanted to tell a story from two points of view, which is something I hadn't tried before.
Because it's a sort of series of emails, letters, plus conversations, and each chapter is in each voice.
Yeah, and it's interesting we're both using the word voice. I suppose it came together best once I realised that I was going to include letters that she writes to her father, and her father died when she was young. She uses the letters to stay close to him and keep him in her life in a way. Once I sort of had that as the medium, she came more and more to life and sort of revealed who she was to me. But it was quite a challenge. But, you know, we all want a challenge and hopefully rise to the challenge.
And you had to be very careful negotiating that, because it's a very political area you're stepping into.
It is a very political area, and it was clear to me from the start that I would need to engage with the local organisation for the deaf, TASDEF, and I felt that if I engaged too early, I might never be brave enough to write the story. So I waited until I had a first draft. I was really quite nervous. They might say, shouldn't a deaf person be writing this book, sort of thing, you know. But anyway, TASDEF came back to me with further insights. But then I was thrilled at the end when they said, what a great boon to the deaf community. And the person I was talking to said, if one deaf person picks up this book and sees, you know, a strong deaf character, it'll be worth it. And I sort of took that to heart and kept always reminding myself of that, it being important to write a deaf character, which was something I hadn't encountered in fiction, particularly YA fiction.
And also, yes, a deaf teenage character, because that's a completely different animal, I would think, in any, whatever language it is. And especially,
there's a lot going on anyway.
Exactly. And so, I mean, she's been homeschooled. She's lived in a very, I suppose, protected area. The people she meets, mostly in the deaf community. So now she's branching out into this other world. And not only that, how to flirt.
Yeah.
How to hold a conversation.
Summer has been homeschooled in the last years because of the difficulties that can arise in schooling for the deaf. And then Will, well, sort of against his will, I suppose, has just been taken out of school and, you know, in inverted brackets, homeschooled on the boat by his father when Will's mother leaves them.
Will's mother has met someone online, which, of course,
online,
is another layer
right.
to this story about the sort of the adventure and the problems of the online world.
Exactly. Once he's met Summer, he really wants to meet her in person. That sort of hardens his resolve to get them back to Kettering.
Will does end up back in Kettering, and he first sees Summer in a cafe. Can you read the little bit where he and his friend Cully are sitting in the cafe and they spy Summer and her friends?
Will has just been to watch Cully play cricket nearby, and they've gone to the cafe. And when I mention the cowboy boots, that's Summer has, that's her signature green cowboy boots that she wears all the time. Above the cowboy boot is a bare brown leg, a knee and a denim skirt. Hands are flying about above the table. This must be the sign equivalent of everyone talking at once. And I can hear now that they're making all sorts of noises, only not talking noises. Some are quite sudden and loud, and other people in the cafe turn towards the sound. There's a lull in the hand activity, and then some hands shoot out again and fly, I suppose, into meaning. I watch the hands move so fast they blur, and it's completely fascinating. With sign language, you don't even have to pause for breath. Cully notices that something's distracting me and turns right round in his seat. Holy shit, he says. Yeah, I say, it's sign language. What it is, it's three girls our age we don't already know, he says. We have to get to know them. He goes to get up, but I drag him back down and make him look at me. Are you nuts? Sign language means they're deaf. He looks at me blankly. Deaf? Yes, deaf, you know, can't hear. Oh, they've got the bionic ear these days, he says. My nan got one last year, so doesn't that mean no more deaf people? I'm just letting that sink in when he continues. But anyway, who's talking about talking? There are other ways of getting to know girls. I think I groan. Do you know how non-PC it is to say that? Well, there's nothing non-PC about it. I'm talking body language. They say it's 60% of communication. I saw it on TV. Cully, have you ever in your life known anyone who uses sign language? I say. Have you ever known anyone who's deaf? Because I haven't. I haven't got a clue.
Catherine Loma reading from her new book, Talk Underwater. And I think he's got a point there. Body language is half the story about communication.
Absolutely. As someone at TASDEF said, you know, Cully's reaction is the normal sort of reaction, really, you know.
And he says, oh, she looks so normal.
Yes. Apparently that's a quite common sort of thing for people to say. So I was just reading something online the other day about someone, let it be known in this group, that they were deaf, and someone said, oh, and when did you learn Braille?
But Summer's also got her kind of misconceptions, you know. She talks to her friends about, you know, where does she go? And all her friends are saying, well, you know, hearing boys are only after one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But trying to navigate a language between the genders at this age is bad enough. And sure. Then you layer on these other issues. Will rises to the challenge, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He meets Summer's family and sees, you know, how they interact. And I think he's also quite hungry for a family to be around. She's gutsy. She's different to anyone he's known. And so he decides he's just going to damn well learn her language. And so he sets out to do that. He goes to classes and things, but he does also utilise blogs and things online, video clips and things. And there's a lot out there online for people who are interested in learning. So that, you know, that was an interesting discovery for me as well.
I learnt quite a few things from this book. I mean, it didn't actually occur to me about people who were left-handed and sign language.
Yes.
There's an interesting insight from Summer too. They're out in the bay and they're fishing for oysters and they shuck them and they grill them and eat them with bacon and Worcester sauce, which I think's a crime, but anyway. But Summer sits there and they're eating this and we both concentrate on eating, she says. Mm. So there's no signing. There is, I suppose, silence. Mm. I've read about comfortable silences and uncomfortable silences. This must be one of the comfortable ones.
Mm. What became very clear to me in my research is that the experience of any deaf person will be very different to the experience of another deaf person.
Clearly you've had to be careful and you've had to do a lot of research. You also venture into the politics of cochlear implants, all sorts of things in terms of the deaf community and deaf politics. How do you balance that, not being preachy but and not being shallow about it either?
Yes, well, what I had to decide to do was to focus on one story. 90% of deaf children are born to hearing adults. Hearing adults, often they really want their children to speak. I had to choose one story, one character with one background and one present, and only peripherally mentioning those other aspects, you know, either through her friends or comes out, you know, in her letters to her father or... So she knows about some things, though she hasn't experienced them herself, but she knows about them through her reading.
And there's a lovely scene where they sort of find each other at a concert. Mm. I just loved the way Summer reacted to the music.
Summer's gone to the concert on her own and makes her way over to stand right in front of the huge speakers. And I remember being in a similar situation myself and I thought that I was going to, you know, drop dead of a heart attack from being so close to those speakers because they're virtually pushing your body backwards and forwards, but that's how she experiences music. I don't know if they've had one in Sydney, but there are, in Europe, these big concerts that are thrown, especially for the deaf community.
Well, the Sen City, I was fascinated.
Yeah, Sen City, yeah. So they have all other sorts of sensory things happening with the music. So they have scents, you know, in the air to do with the music, and they have floors that vibrate with the music and sort of use this in my story, and the music's really loud, but the deaf can just go on holding a normal conversation.
And I found there's some deaf rappers. I found one, a Finnish one, band called Signmark. Great song called Talk to the Hands.
Fantastic. Like I can't rhyme, well, homie, read my hands or you can't sign. Voice of the deaf people, Signmark, and y'all still gonna act like we ain't equal. Like I'm not an artist who did wrong.
And Catherine Loma, you include a handy little sign language fingerspelling alphabet at the back. I gather you would think that it would be a very useful thing if our children learnt Auslan.
In fact, the title of this book was inspired by a story I heard many years ago. There was a project here called the Claremont Project, and there's a high school, Claremont High School.
In Tasmania?
In Hobart. And young deaf kids went to that school. They taught Auslan to all the kids, because it was where all of the young deaf people went to that particular school. So it became this sort of focus school. And I think it was the centre then for deaf teachers as well. And someone told me a story once about how there was a group from the school and they went snorkelling. The kids realised that the deaf kids were the ones who could still talk about what they did last night even while they were underwater. And so that gave an extra impetus to their own Auslan learning. They all wanted to go back and learn more sign language, thus the title Talk Underwater.
Thank you so much, Catherine Lomer. And Catherine Lomer's book, Talk Underwater, is published by University of Queensland Press. If you want to talk to the man don't
listen, talk to the hand. And Anita Barrow brought us that story. This is Books and Arts on RN.